Greetings, and welcome to the ICL third quarter 2014 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Ms. Limor Gruber, Head of Investor Relations. Thank you. You may begin.
Okay, Jesse, so we can start.
Thank you, Mr. Gruber. You may begin.
We didn't hear her.
Jesse, can you start again, please?
Absolutely. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the ICO third quarter 2014 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Ms. Limor Gruber, Head of Investor Relations. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Jesse. Hello, everyone in the room and on the line. Welcome, and thank you for joining our third quarter 2014 conference call. We are very happy to be here in London for the first time. The reports, the press release, and the presentation were filed to the SEC and the ISA, and they can also be found on our website. Please review all reports with relevant data and consideration, as well as the disclaimer slide in the presentation. Those of you who follow us on WebEx can follow the presentation online. We'll start with Stefan Borgas, our President and CEO, followed by Avi Deutschmann, Executive Vice President, CFO, and Strategy. Additional ICL Executive Committee members are either here or on the line, and we will all be happy to answer your questions afterwards. Thank you. Stefan, please.
Great. Thanks, Limor. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, here in London, in Tel Aviv in our head office, and all around the world, especially in New York, where we're starting to build a new home. So let me right away jump into the third quarter. The federal markets continued the positive trend in the third quarter. We witnessed better volumes in potash, in phosphate fertilizers, in brominated FRs, and also in brominated biocides. We have a nice, good development in our operating income. Our net income went up less, mainly affected by the higher financial expenses on the one hand and the higher tax rate compared to last year due to just currency changes. So much of this is a one-time effect and it's skewed on the comparison, so don't be too nervous about it. Avi will explain later. Just the currency effect on the net income is a $17 million effect. Yeah, what happened here is that the shekel devaluated quite significantly just at the end of the quarter, so we had to incur all of the higher expenses and taxes, but we didn't profit yet operationally because it all only happened at the end of the quarter. So as the fourth quarter happens, unless the shekel devaluates further or appreciates dramatically, you will see the improvement in the operating income as well. We achieved a number of strategic milestones this quarter. In our core three markets, agriculture, engineered materials, and also in food. Most important one is the fact is the approval of the investment in Spain now by our board of directors. We have an investment program to increase the capacity in Spain to 1.4 million tons of potash. It's a little bit below a million now. And this includes infrastructure for much more than that. For example, in the port in Barcelona, the board approved $330 million out of this $435. It's simply a scheduling issue. Some of the detailed engineering for the later projects are not yet ready, but this is nicely on the way. We bought a small company in the UK called Omega Sciences. This is a technology buy. It's a very small acquisition in terms of numbers, but important for our specialty fertilizer business, helping on drought management of crops. We entered into a manufacturing joint venture with Albemarle for the production of a new, very promising polymeric flame retardant. replacing an old, outdated product in Europe. And we also sold the first one of our non-core businesses, our alumina, paper, and water business, to Kurita, which is one of the worldwide most recognized experts in water management, both equipment and chemicals. So we're very happy about this. This is a 250 million euro transaction. Net on after tax, it accounts to about $260 million. We're happy that this supports, of course, the financing of our growth. ICL continues to focus on its core value chain that you see here in slide number four. This is really what we want to build out, and whatever doesn't fit into this value chain from the minerals into our three target end markets, whatever doesn't fit in here is businesses that potentially could come up for divestiture. Let me go a little bit now into the businesses themselves. In fertilizers, slide number five. In fertilizers, we have had a great year by all standards. A lot of this is due to the fact that we just had a great agricultural year. No weather impact in any one of the big growing seasons this year, with almost perfect crops everywhere. This happens once every decade or so. And that was, of course, contributed a lot to the volume growth that the entire industry saw. We saw it especially in our potash franchise, all around the globe, in all markets. Especially the growth in China and India continues to be strong. It can offset, we think, some of the declines in volume that we expect to see next year, because most likely there will be some weather impact somewhere, and of course crop prices will make farmers a little bit more careful, especially in the Western world, but we're pretty confident that India and China for ICL can offset a lot of this. In potash, there's the next phase of our restructuring coming that has actually just started with negotiations with our unions at the Dead Sea. We just like in our phosphate operation, we also here need to reduce labor costs and increase efficiency of our plants. The discussions with the unions have just started a few weeks ago. In the fourth quarter, we expect to see some labor interruptions. The packages we offer are very, very attractive for early retirements. So we hope there will not be any long strikes, but of course this is outside of our control, and if there's a long strike, then we can't change that. We need to get our cost base down on this side. The reason why we're so confident that we need to get that down and this will pay back is our phosphate operation in Rotem, where if you look at the profitability in the third quarter, you can really truly see the effect of that rebasing of cost and output in the phosphate platform. The strike is over. We have reduced about 15% of the staff. At the same time, we have increased output by about 10%. And that, of course, now you can see in the results. Really, really great job of our phosphate management team, but of all the employees also at this site. The challenge on the crop prices I already talked about. In our industrial products business, we have a little bit of a positive one-time effect in our phosphorus flame retardants, because our Chinese competitors were in shortage of one of their key raw materials, bisphenol A. It was just not available in China, so we produced much more and sold much more than we would have otherwise. It's not a super profitable business, but it contributed to the strong performance. The bromine franchise has been in slow price decline over the course of the last 18, 24 months. So we need to do two things here to turn this around. First, we also need to get our cost base adjusted to structurally lower quantities, but also to the higher competition. Also here, we have started the discussions with the unions. The model is the same than in phosphates and in potash. We've started to discuss with the unions. We hope we can avoid any major interruptions, but again, We're also prepared to go through a strike phase in order to do this. So this is in the process of happening, and hopefully will be delivered somewhere until the middle of the first quarter. But also in bromine, we need to work on the market side. So we've announced a 20% price increase just recently for our elemental bromine. And subsequently, later on, this will also this might also be expanded to the brominated compounds. In the performance products business, the food specialty business is now ready to go into a higher growth mode than in the past. We've been adding with quite a lot of trouble, about 50 R&D and commercial people around the world in this business. They are now almost all on board, and we can start to see in the monthly performance that the traction is increasing in this business. This, of course, is the prerequisite to then be able to leverage this global platform. Just a word on the fertilizer market here with some numbers. You can see pretty much every market performed fantastically well this year. This doesn't happen very often. So it's a bit of an exceptional year. Weather helped us. We always complain about weather, but this year I think we have to also say thank you. Let me spend a few minutes on the regulatory environment in Israel. The bad news is we're still going to incur a significant tax increase. It's maybe not quite as dramatic as we thought still eight weeks ago, but it's still a substantial tax increase. We haven't received the details of what the government actually wants to do, and here a lot depends on the details, but the original number of $160 million tax increase calculated for the 2013 prices and volumes, now with the new recommendations seem to be more in the bracket between 120 and 140 million tax increase. Still is a significant tax increase, but it's not as bad as everybody has assumed, or not quite as bad as everybody has assumed. Take it with a little pinch of salt because we don't have yet the details, and so the implementation is going to hang in there. The good news about this is that now the uncertainty is off the table. We know what we're dealing with. We can adjust our operations. We're speeding up the cost reduction because this is the most profitable thing to do now in Israel is cost reduction. We're eliminating or delaying investments at the same time so that we conserve cash in this geography where payback times now after the third big tax hike in just as many as 3 years that we had to incur in Israel, payback times for projects are just so long now that every time we check a project in Israel, it loses out to almost every other project we have competing with it around the world. And the consequence is just very clear. So from a capital allocation perspective, we are de-emphasizing investments there, at least until the environment changes. Actually, this makes us very sad as Israelis or new Israelis or passionate lovers of the countries, because the country doesn't need this kind of a burden on its industry. It could profit much more than from, if you put it in the perspective of the country, relatively moderate tax increase. But for a company, of course, this is a big burden. So hopefully in a couple of years, there will be more logic coming back into the regulators, on the regulators' tables, and then this can be turned around, and we can go back in our home country and also continue to invest there. There's one plant that we had decided to close based on the initial recommendations. This is the magnesium metals plant in Israel. There seems to be some movement here to recognize that this taxation is actually the one, the reason that this plant gets pushed over the edge, pushed into a cash loss situation. So if the regulator really comes back on this decision and gives us an environment in which we can avoid this cash loss for this plant, then of course we will rethink the closure decision. But our team is really, really fighting on two fronts because unions, believe it or not, are pushing for higher taxes, not understanding that they hurt their own constituents. So we're fighting on two fronts, and it's unfortunate, of course, for the people who work in this in this plant. So I think we have things under control. We know exactly what to do in Israel. Once the law is in place, we will also explore legal actions, because some of this is still possible, in order to make our home country eventually good again for investments. On the positive side is the environment in Spain. Here we have very close relationships with local authorities, with regional governments, and with national governments, with environmental groups, with trade groups, with unions. This is actually a good sign to see how things could work. We think that our investors actually underestimate quite significantly still what the potential is of our operation in Spain. We are operating today at 15% of the total concession area. So we have very significant reserves in Catalonia. The logistics and the geological character of this operation give us the opportunity to expand with very attractive capex to volume ratios, and do it in step-by-step expansion. We have already invested about 170 million euros in the operations up till now to consolidate two mines into one. This gives us a nice cost step down of around 40% per ton of potash. And now this opens the platform for debottlenecking and step-by-step growing the volume to these 1.4 million tons that I already mentioned. And we do the entire investment amount eventually will be about 430 million. This includes a significant portion of infrastructure that need to be redone. So there's a big portion of maintenance capex in there that we would have had to spend anyway, especially around the ports and all the logistics infrastructure and some of the surface plants. After this is done, there is another potential of at least a million tons in the same fashion to increase slice by slice, year by year. So this is a great operation for ICL for the next decade to grow slowly as demand also grows. Our specialty fertilizer business this quarter had something like the perfect storm. This business ships, of course, high-end specialty products into vegetable and horticulture markets, mostly around the world, and it got hit by three small crises around the world, the Ukraine crisis, the Gaza crisis, and the Ebola outbreak. And if you put it all together, it's actually a burden on this business. So the performance here was relatively low. It's, of course, subsidized in our phosphate business, so if you see the numbers in phosphate, it makes it even more impressive of what happened in the base phosphates here. In the engineered material, the new polymeric FR-122 plant will be operated now together with Albemarle. This is a new generation of flame retardants. It will replace a product called HBCD, which is the flame retardant for polystyrene insulation foams. Very big market in Europe, but also in Asia and growing in the U.S. This HPCD flame retardant is being outlawed, rightfully so, by the banned by the European Union. The plant is now finished. It has started up. We have started to ship material here. So we have two production units, one in Israel and one in Holland. The joint venture with Albemarle is going to allow us to utilize these plants much, much faster than we would have if we had been alone, and to expand the capacity is in the Dutch plant, where the next expansion will happen, also much earlier than we would have been able to do this alone. On the non-core business side, we were able to sell our aluminum, paper, and water business, as we have reported. It's a net proceed after tax of about $260 million. The deal is on a free cash-free, debt-free basis, of course. We expect closing to happen somewhere around the end of the year, beginning of next year. We have already disclosed that in total, we think we will divest $300 to $500 million worth of non-core assets This, of course, is a big step into this direction. You'll see the news flow over the next 6 to 9 months as more deals than that close. With this, there's just one thing for me to report before Avi goes into the explanation of the numbers and explains you the bridges. ICL has now again been recognized as a world leader in managing greenhouse gases. We are, for the second straight year in a row, with a score of 98 out of 99 in the Carbon Disclosure Index. We're a leader in this overall, and there's quite a number of reputable companies that we left behind us, and this, quite frankly, makes us proud that we're not only a profitable and growing company, but we also take care of our environment, maybe a little bit better than other people do. With this, Avi, please, the financial results.
Thank you, Stefan. Third quarter's revenue was contributed to $1.56 billion, 8% higher than third quarter of 2013, mainly as a result of higher volume with compensate for lower prices. This is the main effect on the turnover. Of course, volume and prices affect also our operating income, but we have also in operating income some other effects. One effect, it's a slightly lower raw materials, mainly energy cost that we enjoy from accelerate our moving from oil to natural gas, and of course our efficiency project. We announced, as Stefan mentioned, we announced that we have planned to achieve $350 million increase of our EBITDA as of end of 2016. We are already in a very good progress because we are going to achieve in 2014 $80 million from this amount. So most of this $18 million are already in our results for the three quarters, and some of them, of course, also in this third quarter. Our net income is lower than the same quarter last year, as mainly as a result of two things. Stefan talked about them, but I want a little bit to elaborate. So one is the difference is our financial expenses, the fact that we have higher debt level, also a little bit increasing in our interest rate, increase our financial expenses by $18 million. And this, more or less, is something that we are supposed to see also in the future. The second effect is on our tax expenses, and this is something that we believe is one-time effect. Basically, we enjoy from depreciation of the shekel against the dollar. Usually, this depreciation is good effect. This is what I said that we enjoy from this, because usually it reduces our operating cost, ongoing operating cost. The problem is that this depreciation was mainly at the end of the quarter. So if you look on average exchange rate in the quarter, we have even a little bit appreciation of the shekel against the dollar in the quarter compared to previous year, third quarter. But at the end of the quarter, we had this depreciation, and this depreciation affects mainly our balance sheet, not our operating costs. In the tax, basically, our financial currency, it's a dollar, but for tax purpose in Israel, we calculate our tax based on shekel. And the difference between shekel and dollar affect our results and also affect our accrued for taxes. And this balance sheet item was affected, and we had negative effect of $17 million this quarter as a result of this exchange rate. Taking consideration that we have about $1 billion expenses in shekel terms annual basis, so if we estimate that this depreciation will continue also in the future, we are going to gain, enjoy from this regarding this $1 billion expenses in shekel terms. If we follow our business and see what is the gap analysis on sales and operating profit, and we start with potash, of course. So again, as I said, we gain from a better volume, improve our sales by $105 million compared to third quarter last year, compensate by reduction on prices on a level of $57 million. This is the main reason of our $53 million improvement on sales. Of course, effect on prices, almost fully affect our operating profit, while our volume affect only partially. So we can see that on operating profit, basically the volume and price effect more or less compensate one each other. Still, we enjoy from, as I said, lower energy cost and some efficiency improvement and cost efficiency that we had that give us a better operating profit compared to previous quarter, same quarter last year. On phosphate, on sales, we are more or less balanced, a little bit more volume was compensated by lower prices, but if you look on operating profit, then our efficiency activity that we take last year and the beginning of this year was very materially dramatic. We can see improvement in our operation profit, mainly as a result of this efficiency project and also some reduction in cost, mainly on energy. In industrial products, we enjoy from a better volume. $33 million improvement of our sales came from better volume, a little bit compensated by lower prices. This better volume also improved our operating profit by $13 million. And again, better raw materials support our operating profit against reduction in prices that offset part of this improvement. When we talk about better volume in industrial product, basically we talk about most of our activities. It's brominated based flame retardants, bromine and chlorine based biocide, and for water treatment, and also clear brine fluid for oil drilling. In all this business line, we had better sales this quarter compared to last year. In performance products, we had improvement of our sales mainly as a result of our acquisition, not so big acquisition, but in, for the level of the segment, they have some meaningful. So we improve our sales by $11 million because of these acquisitions in the fire safety business and in the food markets. This is two acquisitions that we had that improve our sales. On the operating side, better prices improve our operating, but we suffer from a little bit higher raw materials, partially as a result of the strike that we have at the beginning of this year in Rotem. As a result of the fact that we have strike in Rotem, our business in Germany and U.S. had to buy phosphoric acid in the open market with higher prices compared to our prices, and this, of course, most of this effect was in the first and second quarter, but as a result of effect on our inventory, we was negative effect in this quarter by $3 million as a result of this strike. Last thing that I want to mention is our plan to enter the public bond market. Yesterday, our board of directors instruct us to prepare a bond offering in the U.S. Basically, we announced that we start this process basically today. We get a rating, international rating for ICL. This is the first time that we have international rating. Till today, we had only local rating, and we get international rating from two rating agency to international Standard & Poor's and Fitch. Both of them gave us BBB stable rating. So we start this process and to raise debts in the public market, mainly outside of Israel. Basically, the proceeds, we plan to use them for a few topics. One, basically to replace or to free some credit line that we utilize today. The second is to diversify the source of funds that we use, not be depend only on bank lines or private market to enter to this big public market. And also, of course, this source can support our M&A strategy that based on M&A efficiency and enablers. So for this, of course, the source of this fund can be supported. So for this, I think we can open it to question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Avi. Thank you, Stefan. I will start some questions in the room. So, okay.
Sophie Jourdier from Liberum. Two questions, please. First of all, you just update us on how you see CapEx evolving for ICL over the next couple of years, given the projects that you've, I guess, cancelled and now approved. And second, just on the industrial products business, could you just talk a bit about the moving parts you've got going on there? I think it was in that business that the bisphenol A helped in the quarter. Could you just quantify that? And then talking about the regulatory changes you've got with the HBCD being phased out, this new product coming in. Also, you talk about regulation changes or anti-dumping tariffs in biocides. How should we think about the phasing of your business as you go through these changes in the industry? Thanks.
Okay. On CapEx, our guidance is relatively simple. We spend around $800 million of CapEx per year. This is the amount we have been guiding so far. Now, as we get into growth, we will replace some of the infrastructure CapEx that's included in these $800 million today with growth CapEx. So even with higher growth rates, CapEx rates will not go up. The shift of the investments from Israel into other geographies should not have a very significant impact on this CapEx guidance because we're shifting. There might be some timing effects. So it might have we might have a little bit lower CapEx rates in the next 2 years until projects have caught up. But this is very difficult to schedule and very difficult to guide on. So if you plan with $800 million per year CapEx, I think you should be in good shape. Industrial products, the environment, yeah, this could be a long answer. I'm trying to give you a few blocks. There's the flame retardant business, which is about 40% of the segment. This business suffers under an aging portfolio. We haven't early enough tried to replace it. This product, FR122P, is a good example of a new product which will replace an old one. What's the effect of this? The effect of this is that the old product is HPCD, which is currently sold around $4, $5, $6 per kilo, will be replaced with a product that will be sold at $10 to $12 per kilo. So because it's IP protected and it's higher value, the margins, of course, is better here. So it doesn't affect so much top line, but it affects bottom line because of this. It a little bit affects top line as well. And this is the development that we will have in this flame retardant business over the course of the next 3-4 years. It's a qualitative improvement, not so much growth there. Growth only will come once bigger innovation projects come into the market, and we're 4-5 years away from this. So it's qualitative improvement in the bromine franchise coming from this effect and coming from simple cost reduction and efficiency improvements, which I've also talked about. Then we have the Clearon swimming pool chlorine business in the U.S., which is a business we're not extremely excited about. It will be supported with this anti-dumping duty in the U.S. so that the business will return a reasonable amount of cash. It's a business that we will have to think about whether we keep it long-term because it doesn't fit into our mineral value chain. So, but we haven't made any decisions on this yet. We're focused on improving the business for the time being.
Great. Sorry, and just a quick follow-up. I mean, so if on the industrial products business, should we expect, therefore, in today's environment, just to see margins gradually picking up next year, 2016?
Yes. 15, 16, that's what we're focusing on, margins improvement.
We have another question in the room.
Yeah, thanks. Andrew Stott from Bank of America. There's a couple, really. I think you said in the statement this morning, 80 million of incremental cost savings. You got any guidance for 15 and 16? I seem to remember about 100, but I wanted to double check that. So incremental, not total.
Okay.
And the second question was, is the chart on slide 8 on Spain? Just so I'm clear in my mind here, the chart refers to production, and then you talk about 130% capacity expansion. And it might sound like a picky question, but I was always under the understanding that Spain was running below nameplate. So are we talking about 130% capacity expansion and therefore more production expansion?
Okay, let me start with the second one because it actually sounds picky, but it's a good question because it links to our business model. You know, in the Dead Sea, which is by far the biggest capacity we have with 3.5 million tons, we can store volumes of potash basically in unlimited quantities. It's up to a year, year and a half of total production. And because of this feature, we're running the entire production capacity flat out. That's as a business model. So the UK mine, the Spanish mine, and the Dead Sea operation are running all year long, we never stop. And if we have sales weakness, we manage this through this stock built up in Israel. And we don't want to change this model. Why? Because it contributes to very high capacity utilization, and it is, of course, one of the reasons why our return on invested capital is superior to the one of most of our competitors, because we can make use of this. It's a unique feature that we have. So as we expand the mine in Spain, we intend to produce it all, of course. And we continue to breathe with this mechanism. And what that means for ICL sales, it means that roughly on average over the course of the next decade, we think we can grow potash sales somewhere between 150 and 200-250,000 tons every year, which in the scope of the global potash market of 56 to 58, 60 million tons is not that dramatic. Half of these sales we think we will generate in new territories where there is no potash consumption. So the weight that we put on the market, the pressure we put on the market is going to be minimal.
very, very small. So this is capacity expansion. We could have put production expansion also there, and maybe we'll take your question as a as input and change that in here. Cost savings, what we have guided for is that at the end of 2016, we want to have a run rate of $350 million on EBITDA coming from cost savings and efficiency improvements. It's not just all cost savings, it's also output changes like you could see in the Rotem example. So, which means you see the 350 in the P&L in 2017, because at the end of the year is a run rate. In the P&L 2014, you will see 80. So from 14, 80 to 17, 350 is about the. This is you know, you can make up your mind, and I want to keep a little bit of this operational flexibility to not be nailed down too much on exactly how much we'll do in 15 or 16. But I think it becomes very relatively clear on how this goes. These projects tend to have not a linear increase, but a progressive increase, because projects that you start today start to accumulate, and then you get a faster increase as time goes by. By the way, this cost reduction is not finished at the end of 2016. There's more potential after that. We just gave this as a point in time of guidance. And we haven't quantified very much what we will do afterwards, but there's more to come afterwards.
Only one comment on the capacity expansion. As Stefan mentioned, it's not going to be one project. So we are going to expand capacity step by step. And also this 1.4 million tons that we talk about, if you remember, we talk about 1.1 and then 1.4. So it's by step. It's not immediately expansion capacity. Which also support fully utilize our capacity.
Yeah, thanks. It's Andrew Benson here from Citigroup. You talked at the start about, you gave an update on the outlook for the potash market. You felt that China and India would continue to grow. China's up quite strongly this year, and I thought they're bringing on stream an extra million or so tons of, at least a half a million tons of capacity. I'm perhaps a little bit woolly here. But what you also talked somewhat cautiously about the rest of the world. I wonder if you just elaborate that. Clearly, with lower grain prices, you'd expect that. But actually, the German and Russian competitors are still expressing confidence in growth next year.
Yeah. I mean, traditionally we're a little bit more conservative. We're more conservative than most of our peers on the outlook. We've always been, because we're not so confident about the ability of the industry to really create new demand. In India, we're very close to the market, so I think we're reasonably comfortable that we also will see some growth in 2015. And in China, we think also we will see some growth in 2015. Some of this, you're right, will be covered with increased domestic production, but not all of it. Where we are a little bit more bearish maybe than our peers is U.S. and Brazil, especially Brazil, because of grower economics in Mato Grosso. I mean, we can see the behavior today. And the second reason is weather. I mean, as strange as it sounds, there will be a drought or a flood or something happening. Usually, once it happens somewhere in the world, and we need to take this into consideration. We cannot take this perfect year and just linearly extrapolate this. We've made this mistake as an industry so many times. I think we should just be careful. If we are wrong, we would be very happy to admit this at the end of next year. But I think we'd rather plan for a little bit more careful. So if we have stability or even a short decline, this is not disaster.
Yeah, I just wanted to. It's Virginie Boucher-Ferté from Deutsche Bank. I just wanted to follow up from this question. If you could elaborate a bit more on what evidence you are seeing in China and India, which makes you so confident that we should see some growth in these countries, given growth has already been pretty good in 2014. I also wanted to ask a question on industrial products. Is the raw material shortage in China over now?
Yes, I think Limor is well suited to answer the fertilizer growth question. In industrial products, unfortunately, the bisphenol A crisis in China is finished. So they're coming back. That's why I said it's a one-time, a little bit of a one-time effect. Now, it has an effect on sales, but it's not the most profitable of our businesses. So you won't, it won't actually have that dramatic of an effect. But I think in terms of honesty, we wanted to mention it. But it's finished. They're back into normal production.
And would you be able to quantify this benefit in Q3?
We'll have to come back to you with that.
Fine.
But it's low single digit.
Yeah, probably not more than that. Virginie, regarding your question about India and China, so for India, we really see, as Stefan said, since we're very close to the market, and of course we have this Potash for Life project with IPL, which is the biggest importer, we really see farmers adapting to new prices. I mean, it took them a few years, 2 to 3 years, but they are adapting to new prices. And following this couple of years of very, very low potash fertilization and bad fertilization optimization that they had, they suffered in the yields, and they felt it, and that's why this time, this year, they're engaging more, and we think it will continue. With China, due to the development of the agricultural technologies, we do see increased use of NPK, of blend fertilizing. That is why we see also increase in granular demand in China. And we do see logistical issues within the local producer. It was apparent this year. We think it is not going to be over next year. So this is what gives us the confidence for these two markets.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
I think we can now move to questions from the line, please. Thank you.
Thank you. And just as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our first question is coming from the line of Joel Jackson with BMO. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good afternoon. I want to talk about your potash inventory levels and maybe the outlook for 15 shipments. Potash inventories for you were quite high at the end of 13, and now they're kind of low to average. So is it reasonable to expect, you know, ICL's potash shipments to be down 100 or 200,000 tons in 2015?
Yes, that's reasonable.
Okay, and just looking into the next few years, if I understand correctly, you know, over 4 or 5 years, we should expect 300,000 tons of more potash production out of Spain as you finish that first phase. And then if the magnesium plant shuts down, we should expect 100,000 tons to be reduced. And if not, that 100 is still available. Is that correct?
If we shut down the magnesium, that could very well happen unless we have other efficiency measures in the Dead Sea, which is not to be excluded. So I think in the Dead Sea, the outlook is not that negative.
Okay.
The team's looking at different ways of how to harvest better, of how to improve. You know, we cancel all the capex, but of course we didn't switch off our brains. We have an efficiency program from which the labor aspect is always discussed very highly, but the technical aspect of improving plant output and raw material yields, this has at least as much potential as the labor cost reduction, as we could see in Rotem also.
Okay. You have some commentary in your slide deck or some of your releases today that you expect once Eber Potash can expand up to over 2 million tons, I think, that you think costs can approach the Dead Sea. So what I want to ask you on that is, what currently is sort of the cost premium per ton of Eber Potash over the Dead Sea, and how does that scale down as you bring in the extra 300,000 tons and as you hopefully bring in the additional million tons?
Slide 8, you can see 25% cost per ton reduction.
Right. Can you give a little more color on how that will be achieved and in what steps? Thanks.
Well, the first step down will happen at the end of 2015 when we move two mines into one. We're building a big ramp right now, which allows us to double, more or less double,
almost double the output of this second mine, this younger one, which has a lot of reserve potential. And of course, when you do that, you go from two fixed cost blocks into one fixed cost block. So this is a big step down. And then every expansion after that, every 100,000 tons after that, is going to happen on the same infrastructure with absolutely fantastical marginal cost for that additional 100,000. This is even under normal taxation environment, this would be extremely competitive with the Dead Sea, better than the Dead Sea, simply because of this marginal effect. Once you have this infrastructure, once you have this platform, you can start to leverage it. And that's what we're doing here. So costs will go down step by step, with a significant step at the end of 2015 once this ramp is built. And then, I don't know, between 5 and 10% for every step thereafter.
Okay, finally, you make a comment that you expect potash shipments globally to be down in 15, but prices to be up. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Well, prices are very much supported by the granular prices that the world needs and is very, very short on, also in 2015. So granular prices will be, 45% of the world's market is short. Potash, everybody talks about potash oversupply, but 45% of the world market asks for granular prices, and is actually short. At least this year and next year, it still will be. So there's no price weakness there, even with a little bit lower volumes. The standard prices are going up as a consequence of this, because the gap has widened so much. So if you follow recent transactions in Southeast Asia, Malaysia, Indonesia, not dramatic volumes, but some shipments have been closed, some sales have been closed at $350 per ton. If you take a little bit of a discount, this is a significant increase, much more than 10% compared to the prices that we had in the middle of the year. And I would expect that most of this would be translated to the new Chinese prices that traditionally the big players negotiate in China in December, January timeframe. So here, I think after that, we will know exactly what it will be, but I would expect it goes into that direction.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next audio question is coming from the line of Joseph Wolf with Barclays. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. I had a couple of questions, but first I just wanted to, congratulate Avi on his announced retirement. So good luck.
Thank you.
Why did you have to rub it in?
I thought it was a congratulations. With regard to the phosphate field, Sadeh Barir, you didn't give any update today. It looks like from the local press that there is some movement there, and I was wondering if we could get an update on the potential for new investment there. And then along those lines, you talked about the regulatory environment and how it's passed through the Knesset. But what is the recourse at this point in time, a new government? How quickly could things be turned around? And as you think about the investments that you're making outside of Israel versus what you're making in Israel, how would you balance that if things moved in the other direction?
Okay. On the mining field in Stebarir, this is the phosphate mining field that we have been applying for since, 15 years or 16 years now. Oh, no, it was 15 years last year, so I guess it's 16 years now. There is now movement, but it's more perception than action yet. So we haven't seen the issue in the infrastructure council where it must be decided upon. If we go to the national level right away, so this will save us one round of approvals and protests. And most likely then some of the opponents might take it to the Supreme Court, because that's the last recourse there. But if it gets, if it gets into the National Infrastructure Commission, then it looks like we have a lot of support there. So I want to be positively, carefully optimistic about this. We have 8 years of reserves, so it doesn't have to come tomorrow, but we're planning for alternatives, as you know. We're pretending as if it will not happen. So for our business case, it is then positive. New government now, I think this is all speculation. Will there be a new government or not? It's not in our power and it's not in our sphere of influence. And then what will the new government do with taxation? I hope that eventually in Israel there will be more of a economic view of taxation for the country and not just a tax view, but a full economic view. Had this committee done it, they would have said taxation is already too high. It's not good for the country what they're doing. It is not, and this is very clear. But they choose to just look at taxes, not at total economic value of these industries. And I think this has the potential to change, but not probably within the next 2 years, because this needed a little bit of time to be absorbed, and maybe we also need to continue to create some facts. What does that mean for our investments? We clearly know what we would do in Israel. The projects are there. We don't throw them in the garbage can. We keep them in the drawer so we can reactivate them relatively quickly, but of course every year that we don't work on them postpones them, delays them by 1 year. And if we decide to build extra 400,000 or 500,000 tons in Spain, that means we don't need 400,000 or 500,000 tons from the Dead Sea. So once we've built it in Spain, then we're covered for the next 3 or 4 years of growth. And then it will all delay itself. If we build a bromine compound plant in China, this plant will never return to Israel. So whatever is gone is gone. And I think the officials in the country who are not all with solid, detailed economic background and education, they need to understand this. They need to learn this. And it's unfortunate for the country. We are very open with this. We're not hiding anything. We're also not very aggressively PRing this, but we make our business decisions. Thankfully, we have many options, and we execute them. So we're happy to go back to Israel. All things being equal, we're even happy to give Israel priority on investments. But things have to be equal and comparable and attractive. That's just a matter of fact. Otherwise, we endanger the company.
Okay, and just as a follow-on, you touched a little bit about magnesium and the impact on potash, potentially, but there's also a cost benefit to the bromine business on the chlorine side. What happens to the cost if you shut that facility down? Is it immaterial, or would it actually be material on the chlorine side of the equation?
No, it's relatively small.
Basically, we analyzed the total synergies between the magnesium and the rest of ICL activity in the range of $20 million.
Yes.
Perfect.
$20 million cash per year.
Okay.
And this is the $20 million cash we need to get out of the synergies. Right now, they're taxing at least half of it away. So we can't run a business with $20 million cash loss. Next question, please.
Thank you. And just as a reminder, if you'd like to ask an audio question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad at this time. We currently have no additional audio questions at this time.
We have one additional question in the room.
Andrew?
Yeah, it was just to come back on a couple of things. It's both currency related. So if the dollar shekel does nothing from this point, do we assume that the tax rate stays at 27, which was the Q3 rate? That's my first question. And
no.
Then I was just wondering why, in the bridges you gave for each of the business units, why the FX impact is not across all of them. I think it was only in one.
I'm not sure that I understand your second question, but for the first one, the one-time, the effect on the tax, it's one-time effect, basically about 5 to 6% on the tax rate. So take out this one-time effect, our tax for the third quarter was 20%, 21%, 22%.
Okay, so I should run with that.
Yeah. So you should run with 20%, 22%, not 27%.
Got it. Okay.
The second part, yes. No.
Clarify this, because I mean, basically, you've got one business unit with an EBIT impact from FX only, which doesn't make any sense to me. So I just wondered why.
And it is negative.
No, yes. you talk about industrial products. Industrial products, it's main effect, it's not shekel dollar, it's euro or yen dollar. It's on the sales, basically, because we have some sales in euro terms and yen terms. This company with a functional currency, it's the dollar. We have some other sales in euro, of course, but
yeah,
the functional currency of this company is euro.
And the reason why you don't see the dollar-shekel effect is because it happened at the very tail end of the quarter, so it has no effect operationally. That's what Avi's point is. It will have one as of the fourth quarter, assuming exchange rates stay where they are. But it, yeah, so from a booking perspective, we incurred a tax hit, but we don't have the operational advantage yet. That's why it's one time.
Okay. We have no further question from the room. So I think we can conclude at this point, and I would like to thank everybody that came here today, everybody that were on the line. Thank you for your time. And, of course, we are always available for your questions, as you know. Goodbye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. We thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect your lines at this time.